Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table in the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, the center of everything. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Marcus at the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. So for more information, just drop in and check it out. Or you can go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask what's going on. They usually have a lot of fun, very British activities.
Stuff.
And food.
Stuff. And food. Good. Good. Well, it's winterish today, which it should be, because here we are.
Yeah, the middle of January.
It's winter.
Finally, we get a little snow. It looks wintry.
Yeah. Today, we're going to be thinking about winter gatherings and winter hospitality. I'm going to talk about a magical dinner gathering I went to. We're going to talk about a twist on honey. We'll talk about plastic. Recycling, how are we doing with that anyway? Yes, and maybe if we have time later, a little bit on seed catalogs, because they are rolling in, folks. Seed catalogs. It may be the dark days of winter, but things are looking up. Also, I want to mention that I had a small road trip last week, and I did an
Iowa road trip.
Road trip, and I ended up in southwestern Iowa in a small town called Harlan. Actually, it's not so small. Harlan, Iowa, which is kind of between here and Omaha. And I went to a restaurant called Milk and Honey. Milk and Honey is just dandy. It is worth a stop. I was there for noon. For the noon lunch, and I had biscuits and gravy because I thought that would be good, and they had really good ham, and my husband Joe had a beet and bean burger. He picked that out in between all the other good burger stuff that was there. One nice thing about this restaurant: it's farmer-owned, food made with love, and it has all high-quality local ingredients. If you want local, they list all the farmers right there on the wall.
Right, and this is Harlan in western Iowa. Mm-hmm. It's not a very large town.
It's not, and it looks like they're going great guns.
And it is owned by the Roseman family, mm-hmm. who are organic farmers for a long time. Beef and pork, I'm sure all the meat at the restaurant mm-hmm. comes right from their farm. Mm-hmm. So really high quality meat products. You can actually buy their meat products frozen here in Ames in the Wheatsfield frozen meat department. I often eat their hamburger because it's good.
If it's good.
Their pork. Yeah.
It's good. Oh, yes. The ham that we had.
And I think they sell their lard now at Wheatsfield, too. So if you want a really good, clean lard product,
ask for it. They always run out, although it's really good lard. I love it. So Milk and Honey. If you're ever in
Milk and Honey restaurant. Yeah.
Restaurant. It is a farm-to-table restaurant established in 2015. It's located inside the old Hotel Sailor. Sailor, in downtown Harlan, Iowa. It's just really cute. It's got all kind of the bit of the old world there, but it's a nice.
So if you're driving west on 80, how far of a deviation do you need to make to get to Harlan?
You have to take a right if you're going west, and you go north maybe about 18, 20 miles.
Oh, it's really close then off of 80.
Well, yeah, I mean, It's
yeah, if you're going
next,
that way, it's a good lunch stop. Yeah,
it's a lunch stop. It's good, and they're right on the square, huh? They're open for casual breakfast and lunch, and they do selective dinner service. So call ahead or look for the Milk and Honey Harlan, Iowa website. And Facebook page, of course. It was worth a stop.
Yeah.
Three cheers to those folks over there doing the Milk and Honey restaurant. Ah. So we want to consider winter hospitality. We go through this burst of holidays, of New Year's and Christmas and gatherings, and then there's kind of this letdown later. And so there's other reasons to gather. I recently went to, kept the holiday spirit going a little bit, a Madrigal dinner put on, there's big, ISU, Iowa State University puts on one, and the high school puts on. This was a smaller one in a living room, and the host and hostess have been doing this for years, but it has all of the fun stuff because you can participate. There's role-playing, music, jokes, there's a mummer's play. There was roast beef, Yorkshire pudding, neeps and tatties, green beans, Brussels sprouts.
Wait. What's the neeps and tatties?
Neeps, turnips and potatoes.
Oh, mixed neeps together. Are turnips.
Neeps,
right,
neeps and
okay.
Tatties. Notice the Scottish bent here. And there was a fine hard sauce. We did a mummer's play. Huh? Now, a mummer's play is...
This is something old and historical, right?
Oh, yeah. It's stories told over and over again. It's a little skit put on. You know, instead of playing charades or talking about football,
now
people
used to do this. Is Renaissance period,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That refers to the singing. The thing.
And what's the mummer's play, then?
Mummer's plays... Now, this is before soap operas. This is before the internet. So people would get together and kind of tell the same old story over again as part of a after-dinner celebration.
With costumes,
with
costumes. Yeah.
Mummer's plays are folk plays performed by troops of amateur actors. Mummers usually refers to the masks they're wearing. It's very, very simple.
So is this from when we were... As a species making our own entertainment,
That's kind of it. It always has kind of the same characters, just like our soap operas always have the same characters. The mummer's plays usually involve St. George is one of the, and he usually slays somebody, and there's maybe or maybe not a dragon. There's a doctor that brings people back to life. There's usually a heroine. Either Father Christmas or Father New Year shows up to say a few words. It's kind of the same story all over again, but it gives the crowd the opportunity to boo and jeer and cheer, and people die. People are raised up again. It's very simple, but you kind of do it. And so we just cut together and read this play with, of course, we had a box of costumes, and you ham it up. And so we did a mummer's play. That was good.
And do you sing at the Madrigal dinner? So you're making your own music,
you're making your
own theater, and obviously someone made your own food.
Three cheers to Linda, who cooked a fine meal. We all brought a little something or other. And there was role playing. As you go into, some of us wore costumes. As you go into the evening, there is a basket, and you pick your identity out of the basket. I picked the little thing that said serving wench. So I worked out really well. I was a good serving wench, and there's always a king and a queen just so you can have somebody wear the crown and boss us all around. And there's, you know, the knight of the this and the lady of the that. And there was a piece of paper that was taken out. A man got knighted to be the keeper of the grounds, and I thought, okay, a keeper. He made the coffee later. Yes, he did. So, yeah,
And there is a very large publicly open Madrigal dinner at ISU every, I'm not sure when it's coming up.
Soon.
And it's in the Great Hall, and they serve food, and there is music, and lots of costumes, and that's a usually fun event, too.
It's just a thing to do in the winter, and I came away with something I'd never had before. I wish to, give a shout out to something called oatcakes. Oatcakes, and you think, oh boy, that doesn't sound so good, does it? It is a
unless it's oatmeal cookies.
No, it is not. It is not a sweet. It is a savory. Think more of a cracker. It is very simple. Oatcakes. Oatmeal, a little butter, bicarbonate of soda, pinch of salt, and hot water. That's it. You make this kind of gulp, and you can either drop it and make little drop cookies, or you can roll it out and cut rounds. You can make, okay. Now, this is not oatmeal. This is not pancakes. These aren't oatmeal cookies. These are not pancakes. The oat cakes are
cracker.
They're more like a cracker
category.
They're more like a cracker, and they're evidently excellent to have with a little bit of scotch because it's a little salt.
Oh, and, scotch
and or whiskey and it's also recommended for cheese. So look up Scottish oat cakes now. Scottish oat cakes, you can see I could see right away when I ate them that they were good because they were very, very fresh, made out of really, really good oatmeal. Because I could see these things like turning into hockey pucks.
All right, so
real
this
quick.
Is something you have to consume the same day they're made.
Well, it'd be like a biscuit, or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Old biscuits are not very good either.
Right, right.
So Cynthia just passed me a note that the ISU Madrigal dinner is January 17th and 18th, which is this coming weekend. In case you all want to go do your own Madrigal dinner.
Very, very good.
I'm not sure they'll have the Scotch oat cakes, but, oh, and an upcoming, there is a young lady at, the London Underground who is doing a monthly talk on scotches and whiskeys.
Ha!
And we're going to have her on the show. She's really good. So that's it. That's an upcoming, wait for that interview on
Stay
scotch
tuned.
And whiskeys.
Stay tuned. Yes, we're talking winter hospitality here, folks. Donna, you found a really interesting thing. Well, where else do you find things? On the internet.
Yeah, on the internet. Fermented honey.
Okay, here
right.
we go.
So
here we go.
I've been thinking about doing this for a while, and so I thought, well, let's see who's doing it and how you do it. And I found this really good video from, of all people, Bon Appetit. Now, they are known for their high-nosed, rather snooty presentations, and this was something coming out of their test kitchens. But, they are accurate, I must say. You can trust their recipes. They've been tested, and they work really well. But I found out they have this new funny, charming, darling young man named Brad making a special part of a kitchen. He's calling it It's Alive, and he is their fermentation expert. So there is a video on YouTube. So Google Brad makes fermented garlic honey, I'm sure you can find it through the Bon Appetit website. And it's worth watching because he gives a really, really good explanation how to do it. And here I have, so you just nick the honey, the garlic. You peel the garlic, and I put in some big cloves of Lana's most recent crop of garlic into a jar of honey. And then you're just supposed to seal it up, put it in a dark place, but you must open the lid every day because, of course, it produces gas, and it's called burping the honey, right?
Yes,
so he says you need about 10 days, which is pretty much what this is, and we are about to have the first taste. And Alana, arm yourself. Cynthia, the engineer, here we go. This is going to be, let's see what we think of this, girls. First of all, it's very sticky, of course. Let's see. Woo! Oh, it's good.
Whoo!
Woohoo!
Okay, Donna.
Well, and it's supposed to get, the cloves will get darker. You can let it ferment for up to 6 months or more. And he says that even though this is not FDA approved, it's a good cold remedy.
Oh, I think it would be.
I think it would be too.
I also watched this video.
It's quite well done, isn't it?
It's well done.
It's only about 5 minutes, guys,
and it's funny.
If you want to do some home fermentation, this is a really
easy
project.
This is just a jar.
I took a jar of honey. Regular. Mm-hmm. This was a local. Oh, it has to be. Not pasteurized. It has to be raw honey, but there's plenty of it around.
Another little hint I learned as you do this, you don't put it in a full jar of honey because as things ferment, the garlic gives off a little, it starts working in there, folks. So leave some headroom to put it in.
Right, because if you go to burp it and the jar is full, it kind of like just gushes out and it's a sticky mess.
Right. And I learned a technical term here. And you did, things would, little cartoons would pop in into his video, which, I mean, he presents this all pretty straight, but little things pop in. And as garlic ferments, it makes something called allicins. Now, not allicin like the woman, although I think
it's the essential oil components in the garlic, and they kind of come out of the garlic and go into the whole honey. Right. And the allicins, I think, are probably the medicinal qualities.
That's supposed to be good for you. The right. Allicin, and it's Allicen.
Very good.
I remember that because that's one of those other graphic things that popped up. I think this is a great idea because I think honey and garlic are a good winter tonic.
Well, and also, for example, you know, you come home one night in the evening and all of a sudden your throat is feeling a little scratchy and you go, oh, boy, those throat. That's how I can always tell if I'm getting something. The lymph nodes in the throat start to just ache a tiny little bit and you go, uh-oh, it's coming. And my old technique, which I have used for years, was to just take a fresh clove of garlic and chop it into little mincy bits, small enough to swallow, put it on a spoon, and then just swallow with a glass of water. Do not chew. If you chew it on the raw garlic, I mean, some people can handle it. I can't. It's enough to gag a horse, you know. But I would just swallow that, and then, of course, I would make everybody else in the family do it as well so no one catches it, and also so you can all stand to be in the same room at the same time.
Oh, I think garlic gets a bad rap.
It's true. If everyone has eaten garlic, then you're not really – no one else can smell it on you. You know, it's
I think sharing the load is a very fine
thing. Yeah, and it's – you know, it's – it's good for everybody. But I think this honey thing might work better, especially for children or people who are too squeamish to swallow the whole thing.
Because the honey already is aromatic. It is garlicky.
Yeah, and it's a good carrier for this. And if you're serving it to like a child like that, it's a lot closer to a cough medicine.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're used to, okay, a spoonful, that's it. Spoons full of sugar makes the medicine go down.
A spoonful of honey makes the garlic go down. For cold remedies, I have for years used garlic, honey, in a really strong lemon tea. Or you could add this to lemon tea. Well, of course, you have to wrap up and put the cat on your lap. I mean, there's a whole lot of things you can do for a cold. But starting out with this garlic honey might be a fine way to do that.
It's kind of, I mean, I also might use it for cooking. For example, a glaze on a roasted or poached chicken thigh or something like
now,
that.
This
that would
taste,
be good for that,
that
wouldn't it?
Taste would be really nice. I'd never thought of it as, now, there we go, garlic.
All kinds of, so that YouTube is Brad Makes Fermented Garlic Honey, and he's calling his YouTube series It's Alive, and it's all sponsored by Bon Appetit magazine. So and he's funny. He's just charming.
He was so funny that I kind of scrolled through. I watched him make some, he called them half sour pickles, a fermented process.
Right, his whole thing is fermentation.
Yeah, fermentation.
Right?
So he did, and again, that was funny too. And doggone it if those pickles didn't look good. So when the cucumbers
come in. Well, it is Bon Appetit.
Yeah,
you know, they are famous for being our culinary teachers. It's one of the older culinary magazines that's still happening now that Gourmet magazine is no longer alive. But what I like, he's a young man, so he's a new generation, and it's a little more casual. It was fun. It was really, really fun. So check out Bon Appetit. You know, they're having a little refresh here.
Yeah. Garlic, honey. Now, if that doesn't sound like a good thing for January, I don't know what. This is KHOY, and this is Community Radio. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. This is the Donalana Kitchen. So let's talk about shopping, and let's talk about plastic. And specifically, let's get into thinking about those T-handle plastic bags. Many places are getting rid of them now, and boy, we have to change our ways, folks, and it's really hard.
There are countries that are outlawing them, and certain municipalities, because our country is not at the level where we're ready to outlaw them, but after all, we are a very large country, but especially some countries that have, well, like tourist countries where in Mexico the beaches are becoming littered with plastic. It's becoming a problem. It's an unsightly problem.
Oh, dear. So we talked to this is kind of a blast from the past. How were we doing this 4 years ago? We talked to Bronwyn Betty Hansen from the local food co-op here. And
she's also a member of the city council.
Yeah,
so she's
interested in this
give
stuff.
Us a big
and she was talking about what at that time, 4 years ago, what they were doing at their checkout, how things were going, putting this in people's mind to bring their own bags. And also Donna gives us some information from a news item. And she refers to a flood in the late 90s in Bangladesh. And evidently, that had a lot to do with plastic. So thinking of climate change, and this was in the late 90s. And there's a lot more of that stuff happening now. Let's talk about shopping. We were going to be discussing how our food system produces not just food to eat, but there seems to be a lot of detritus that happens, too.
Yes, it's the plastic bag. I'm sort of not in the plastic bag habit myself, mostly because, we try to be ethical here. But the annoying thing about plastic bags is you end up with passels of them at home if you just keep taking them, and they become a rather annoying storage issue, recycling issue. So that alone has encouraged me not to use plastic bags. But I'm going to read this little thing about from the Ban the Bags campaign. It says, typically when people think of plastic bag bans, they think of the marine life that plastic kills. What they don't realize is how much of oil it takes to produce those bags and the other environmental hazards they cause, in addition to threatening our own health and safety. Plastic bags block storm drains, contributing to floods. They leak toxic chemicals into our water and soil, as well as killing marine life, birds, and cows by starvation and suffocation. In 1998 in Bangladesh, plastic bags were discovered to be the main cause of the devastating floods. There were over 1,000 deaths in 1998 as well, as two-thirds of the country was, you guys remember that huge flood. They banned them in India and in Mumbai, because they gum up the works of several things. And also, this article also says that in South Africa, before plastic bags were banned in 2003, they were nicknamed the national flower, as so many bags littered the roadside, stuck to fences and trees. And that year, the government passed one of the strictest bans in existence, a fine of $13,800 or a 10-year jail sentence for using plastic bags.
So welcome to the Donalana Kitchen, Bronwyn.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
And so we're going to talk about ways that a business can address some of these problems. We think about shopping, but we always end up with things to carry all our stuff in. What has Weisfield been doing about that issue?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, Weisfield has always been concerned with waste issues and the environment. And so actually, as long as I can remember at Weisfield, we have offered a nickel if you bring your own bag in when you come to do shopping. And so we started out with that system, did that for a number of years. At one time, we even actually charged a dime if people wanted to take a plastic bag with them. We would charge them for the bag. We went away from doing that and just discontinued having plastic bags at the registers as an option. So now we have still the nickel refund if you bring your own bags in. And then we also, we have paper bags, of course, available.
Well, and in addition to the nickel refund, you also have the opportunity for the shopper to donate to a long list of local organizations.
People can choose to keep the nickel, or like you said, they can choose to donate it to an organization, and we do rotate those out monthly. And it's a good program. Our co-op nickel program has raised a surprising amount of money in nickel increments for some really great organizations.
Yeah, all local funding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nickel.
So what do most, what are you finding that most people do? How do they react when they find out they can't have a plastic bag?
We get very little kickback from that. We get very little pushback. Basically, we have the paper bags as an option, and people seem to be fine with that. We also, in the past few years, started offering boxes. So as a grocery store, we have an infinite supply of stock boxes, you know, that maybe cereal comes in or a case of beer comes in or something like that. And so once those are empty, we take them up to the cash registers and people can choose to take their groceries home in those boxes. And we've found that to be as popular, if not more popular, than paper bags.
People, easy to carry, and things don't get squashed.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, structurally nice, and people can use them at home, and, you know, for storage or, you know, for moving or whatever the case
is. What would happen to those boxes if you didn't put them up front to be recycled?
Yeah, if we didn't reuse them in that way,
the box,
then they'd get recycled with the rest of our cardboard that can't be used.
Broken down and recycled. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we do send away cardboard to be recycled too, so it would get recycled. But I think reuse is a better.
Well, you can reuse a few times, and then it can be recycled.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, my personal solution has been, of course, I have any number of canvas bags, which I love, and I kind of keep them in the car for major shopping. But in my purse, I always have one of those foldable, the nylon bags, because they crunch up into a little ball. You stick them in the sack. They weigh nothing. And then I always have a bag with me when I go shopping.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think, that's a good way to make sure you always have one on you.
Yeah, because otherwise you go, oops, I forgot my bag.
Yeah.
That's it. Shopping is so much of a habit for us. It goes clear back to our hunter-gatherer instincts. I think we go in there and we kind of do things half asleep. At least that's how I usually shop for groceries. But it has taken me a long time, and I'm sure it's taking a lot of us a long time, to actually get in the store with a recyclable bag. And then again, it's making it a habit. I don't know how many times I've gone to the checkout. Oh, it's in the car. I almost brought it in. So as we go along, we're going to get better and better at this sort of thing. I just know we are. Welcome back. This is a Donalana Kitchen. Yes, those plastic shopping bags. Now, that was a bit of an interview with Bronwyn Betty Hansen from the local food co-op here, and that was 4 years ago. Have we done any better? Do we remember our plastic bags or our canvas bags? Do we still use I still have plenty. Thank you. Plenty of plastic bags.
Well, I'm going to give you the bummer news
here we go.
About that. Several environmental issues, you know, it's been relegated for the consumer to do and to take personal responsibility. While that is very important, it's not enough. There was an article recently, and the headline was, "Humanity Can't Recycle Its Way Out of Consumption Problems." And it's talking about a new movie, called The Story of Plastic. It's a new documentary. I'll tell you at the end of this how to find it if you want to see it. The film examines plastics extraction, transport, refining, production, distribution, consumption, and disposal. The final step is the disposal, which is what, you know, we're trying to avoid. But in the film, they say we need to understand the entire lifestyle of plastics, not just the end product. The bigger question we should be asking is who's making it and why. The who may or may not surprise you. It includes ExxonMobil, Chevron, Shell, DuPont, ConocoPhillips, and more. Plastic is a waste product of the oil and gas industry, and those companies could have paid to dispose of their waste properly, but instead they turned the waste into a whole galaxy of things to make life better on Earth, is what they're claiming. 99% of what is plastic is made from fossil fuels. The film also makes the point that of all the plastic that has ever existed, more than half was produced in the last 15 years, and 91% of it has never been recycled.
Half
of it in just the last 15 years. So, and corporations are receiving massive taxpayer subsidies to create this mess. The cost to produce new fossil fuel-based plastics is kept artificially low with oil and gas subsidies. $5.2 trillion annually.
What?
This disincentivizes the use of recycled content and other alternatives.
Because recycling companies, they start up with all good intention, and then a couple of years, we hear, well, we just couldn't make a go of it. That may be why.
Right, and this was the latest blow to the recycling industry, and this affects us here in Ames, because large quantities of recycled trash was being sent to China, which made it, they were buying it and repurposing it over there. Well, now they've discovered they have enough of their own recycled plastics in Asia that they don't want American plastics. So now cities like Ames and much larger cities are all stuck with, well, what do we do it? Because they can't sell it there anymore. It also says that aside from the subsidy given to the oil and gas companies, it also says that while the plastic industry brags, and footage show in the documentary, about investing $1.5 billion to find plastic waste solutions, the documentary also points out that $204 billion, they're bragging about 1.5, but $204 billion in taxpayer subsidies is going to build more than 330 new petro-production facilities. So it's a little greenwashing going on there.
Wait. They're not using any of this, like, to recycle. I mean, those are my tax dollars.
No, this is to produce new, fresh products from the byproducts that they're trying to offload onto the consumers, right? Now, the issue is there are So it says the taxpayer, the citizen, is paying both to create the problem and attempt to deal with the environmental catastrophe at the product's end life, while the oil and gas companies just keep getting richer. I mean, there are things that we do need plastic for, like certain medical things. And, you know, if we were only using plastics in instances where no other thing could be used. And there are things that at this point in our technologically fairly advanced civilization, there is some, but it's not for most of the things that we're personally acquainted with.
Well, and as we think about shopping, we all like to shop. We buy things and they're all wrapped in plastic. Everybody complains about the little hard rubber or hard plastic globules over things in the home improvement store that you can't get open.
Everything.
Throw away.
So if you want to see this film, you can go to storyofplastics.org or visit breakfreefromplastics.org. Those are all, with no spaces in them. That's Story of Plastics. If you really want to have an education about where this comes from. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some industrial, and people are going to call it greenwashing, but, I'm all in favor of baby steps, although it might be too late for baby steps, but we need to do this. So, for example, Purdue Farms is making this is a very large meat company. Everybody has bought some Purdue Farms products in their life, and they all come wrapped in plastic of some sort, because plastic, it's called vacuum packing, and in the meat industry, it's a very big deal. Vacuum packing is convenient, and it does make things last longer, you know, it has some benefits and it's used a lot. But Purdue Farms is making a new meat packing foam package that dissolves in your sink. It's made out of cornstarch and it disintegrates under running water. I mean, we are clever enough if we put our will to it to think of solutions to these things. But it really, it's not like I can make my own cornstarch packaging. It's larger corporations. And, of course, I'm sure they are looking for ways to make this cost effective, but they're also doing it because of consumer pressure. I mean, and, you know, I suppose all the people that run that company have children and grandchildren, and maybe they're understanding that for the future long-term, this is not particularly a good thing. So there are a few simple solutions that we're starting to – this was just the hopeful note I wanted to throw in here.
Yeah, dissolvable. This is good.
Yeah. Now, it's not like if you run out to the grocery store and buy Purdue Farms, you're going to get that packaging. They're rolling it out slowly. I think it's on their online marketing, although I don't know who buys meat online, but at least not here in the Midwest. But – obviously, if that works well, they will increase it. There are possible solutions to this if we just put enough focus on it.
Yeah, go back a few years, but when I was a girl, which was a long time ago.
Didn't always come in a plastic package.
It came
with feathers on it.
Well, you know, you'd go to the butcher or even the butcher at the back of the small grocery store,
no.
And you'd get your stuff either fresh cut or out of the case in the chilled case, and it would be wrapped in paper, which you still can do in some meat departments, and you end up with paper.
I'm trying to think who even does that in town.
Oh, Fairway. Speaking of.
Yes.
Fairway. There is a new, today, a new Fairway grocery store opening up here in town. The old one has slowly been kind of emptying out.
Oh, the downtown Fairway.
Downtown?
The new one's open today?
I believe.
They've got lights on,
but they said they're still kind of moving things, so give them some space.
Well, the last week or two they've been shopping in the downtown Fairway. It kind of looks apocalyptic in there. Lots of bare shelves.
Actually, I found that a good experience. I went in there to buy, heaven knows, I think a bag of sugar, and going to a grocery store sometime when it's not
stocked full,
and think, well, maybe a lot of the stores around the world aren't always as bright and shiny and as we expect them
full
all.
Full of everything that you think
there
you
was
want.
Like spaces and things missing. And boy, you went to buy your can of beans, and they were all out that day, or they were moved to the other store. But anyway, a new Fairway store.
Oh, goody! So the new one's open today. Now, and I've been told they are not having a grand opening until they have time to tear the old one down and get the parking lot fixed for it.
Yeah. They actually, you know, speaking of footprints and doing things, at least thinking of things, they're built on the same city lot. They just kind of built in their old parking lot, and the old one is kind of, we had, you know, squash the things together. And, yeah, they have some fuss to do yet, but a new Fairway store. Look at that.
See? Yeah, well, I'm glad they're maintaining their downtown location.
I am too. It's good. And back to, yes, that is one place, and there's other stores, too, that have butchers. And, yes, you can get things wrapped in paper.
Well,
you can.
Except that, of course, they put a lining sheet of plastic in the paper, and the butcher's paper is somewhat plasticized because you don't want your meat leaking all over.
That's right. There is plastic and paper.
Although sometimes when I buy meat, I ask them not to put the little plastic sheet in.
They could.
If you're going to run right home and cook it up or quickly throw it in the freezer, you're fine without it.
Well, maybe they can use some of that cornstarch plastic stuff to wrap it in before they, I mean, you know, heavens, you can make.
Well, they better figure this out because the meat itself is wet. Now, you don't want the cornstarch plastic dissolving into the meat before you get home.
I'm sure
they've got some chemists working on this somewhere. You know, there's got to be a way to do this.
Oh,
and obviously Purdue is on the case.
Right. Well, Donna, you always say, put a man on the moon. But okay, we're gonna do this. We're gonna figure out how to get things from the store to our kitchen.
I'm not so excited about all this going to the moon because, you know, we got to fix what we're doing here, you know?
Oh, we do. Lots of things to think about. We are consumers, and we deal with stuff. Let's deal with
stuff
better.
And we're eaters.
Yeah, let's deal with stuff in a little more... more earth-friendly way. We better, real quick here. You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen at KHOIFM.org. We have a website there. We have archives. We have recipes. And there's a picture of us. Oh, everything you can find. And you can find out more about this fine community radio station. It is made up of folks that you know and people that are talking about what they love the best. That's what community radio is. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a fine banjo tune. One can never have too many fine banjo tunes by banjo player Bob Black from North English, Iowa. He has been making music for a good long time here in Iowa, and we do love his stuff. That was a great banjo tune called Little Black Mustache. And, yeah, he's got one, too, so it's easy to remember. Bob Black from his CD, Ladies on the Steamboat. Well, we're talking lots of different things here, and we were just talking around the kitchen table here about winter hospitality. I talked about being at a small madrigal in my friend's living room the other night, and we got together and did fun winter things. It's important to do that in the wintertime.
Well, you know... There is this, I think it's Danish, and I think you pronounce it hoogly, but it's a tradition from the Scandinavian countries. And the reason, of course, is because they have extremely long, dark winters. I mean, if we think we've got long, dark winters, they've got it way more than we do. So they have developed ways of dealing with that, which includes keeping yourself comfy, lighting candles around the house, and entertaining a lot and hanging out with friends and family. Keeping yourself well connected. You don't want to isolate in the cold winter, you know, all bound up inside your house by just you.
Good idea. Put on the soup pot and invite the neighbors
in. It's about keeping up your mental health when there's not a lot of sunshine.
Very good. Very good. I have actually, you had some bummer news earlier. I've got some positive news here. This has to do with kind of learning how to do new things and thinking about our life and our contact with the planet here. Kansas City, Missouri, of all places, get this, approves free public transit for all. Lawmakers in Kansas City, Missouri took a visionary step by unanimously voting to make public transportation in the city free of charge. Kansas City Council voted to set aside $8 million to eliminate the $1.50 per ride fare that currently applies. So, some riders could save about $1,000 a year, and that gets like cars off the road and people that use the bus to get around. What a nice present for everybody. And think about, yes, we need to shop. We need to carry our meat home
doing it because, of course, it's the taxpayers are paying for it. But it's probably a worthwhile investment because, A, people will use less cars, we have actually a very, for the size of city that we have here in Ames, we have really good bus transportation system, and it is free for students. All students can ride, as much as they want with their student ID card. So
that's a good, actually, I heard someplace in the Northwest, Portland maybe, is trying the same thing. Our tax money goes to subsidize the plastic industry, we just heard. Our tax money goes a lot of places.
If people are using buses more and there's less cars on the street, maybe we don't have to spend as much on road repairs, for example, if there's not as heavy. I mean, the cost that they spend for public transportation, I'm sure will eventually be a wash with other things that maybe we don't have to do if we have so many cars.
Right. And deciding that there is a public good to all of this. What a good thing.
Yes, there is a public good to it.
Good. Well, this time of year, another thing this time of year, I'm getting seed catalogs, and I'm starting to peruse them.
Yeah, and Lana's sitting by her wood stove reading the seed catalogs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's very hoogly.
It is very.
That means thinking spring will come.
Spring will come. I got a Johnny's Selected Seed Catalog. I'll probably get, for some reason, I'm on their mailing list, so I'll probably get three or four of them. But here I am. It is a great catalog. And it's beautifully done. And they've got lots of good advice in here, planting schedules and seed depth. Oh, they have, it's a good resource. And also in this catalog, they feature farmers from across the nation. And the first star farmer that I ran across here right after the carrot section on page 27 is an Iowa woman here. I want to give a shout out to Kate Edwards from Wildwoods Farm in Iowa City, Iowa. There she stands, a fine picture of her among her collard greens. And she's talking about, she's giving a testimonial to Johnny's. She talks about, she started out as an engineer, but she realized she'd rather be outside. So she has a CSA, community supported
agriculture.
And she's doing great guns over there. And she looks real fine in the pages of the Johnny Selected Seed Catalogs 2020 catalog. So
Lana, do you buy most of your seeds from catalogs?
Oh, yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. I save some, because that's the fun factor. I do that. But, there's so many to look through. And Johnny's is a fine catalog to do that with. Yes, it is. Seed catalogs.
Well, because in seed catalogs, sometimes you can find unusual varieties that you can't necessarily just buy locally.
And I always believe everything they say, watermelons as big as a barn, impress your friends. It's such a nice time of the year.
We have to not fail to mention that in Iowa, we have our very own Seed Savers, and they do have a catalog with really unusual seeds that have been, they're preserving heirloom seeds, and they also, since they are an Iowa seed company, some of the things that they grow there, we can grow here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like if you order California seeds, they're not always going to produce in Iowa what they're producing in California. But
yeah.
Seed Savers is a good source for Iowa seeds.
Here we're moving into this magic time of the year. And by the time the gardening season is done in the fall, I'm ready for a long winter snap. But I'm sort of picking up now, and we're looking ahead. Coming up this weekend is the conference, Reclaiming Resilience, this weekend, January 16th through the 18th, on Practical Farmers of Iowa annual conference that happens here in Ames. You can find out more at practicalfarmers.org.
At the Scheman Center, and I think they have, I don't know, maybe 800 to 1,000.
I think, yeah, it's quite
a big deal with a lot of topics. I mean, even just going on the website and reading what the presentations are, you get a really good overview of some of the cutting edge practices that real farmers are doing their own research and talking to other farmers about. This is not something that is coming from extension services or the government.
Cargill.
Yeah. This is really non-commercial, but high-quality farmer education.
And people making a fine living doing this stuff. There are pre-conference short courses, too, Thursday and Friday, for a little more in-depth things, and you can talk to all kinds of people.
Read a couple examples of what the short courses are so people will understand.
Mechanical weeding, huh? Different kinds of equipment, and heaven knows you'd sit down and talk to a farmer about equipment. It goes on for ages. Diversified weed control, flame weeding, and planning for farmland succession. Commercial apple orcharding, a whole series of things on that, and a whole series of things on growing pasture-raised meat supplies. And meat supply through the marketing of it, too. And we're talking about transforming our food supply here,
right.
And we're
doing it. I mean, this is not only just useful to farmers, but Lana and I both go because we really learn a lot about more about where our food can come from, does come from, and ways that we are improving the environment through farming.
Very good. Very good. And that's a good thing
right.
to do.
How we can possibly clean up the Iowa water, how we can reduce nitrate use, how to do cover crops. There are solutions out there, folks, and we do have farmers in Iowa who have done research and are practicing these things.
Well, very good, very good. Also, another thing coming up, a climate crisis parade, Saturday, February 1st, in Des Moines, put on by the Seed Sovereignty Group and in Indigenous Iowa to urge action and attention on climate crisis. Go to Climate Crisis Parade. They have a Facebook. Who doesn't love a parade? You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you live at noon on Tuesdays, and we repeat at 7 p.m. or go to khoifm.org. You can listen to us anytime. Stream us. Put us on your device. Share us. We had music today by Bob Black. Fine banjo. Thanks for joining us today. So, let's do a little winter hospitality-ing. Have a friend over and enjoy
yourself. Yeah, get some dinner evenings together.
Oh,
cooperative
nice.
Cooking potlucks.
I've been cleaning my freezer, so maybe I'll invite a bunch of people. Well, there's a lot of stuff. There's some things that could go into the crock pot.
I'll take some of that venison in your
freezer.
Okay, yeah.
All that deer in there. You never know. Support this fine community radio station. You can go to khoifm.org. There's a donate button. Yes, there is. My name is Lana Nuxkel.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Excellent engineering by Cynthia McClure. Eat good food and enjoy life.